when I was in Nicaragua in the summer of 04 and then again in 05, the people of Managua were still talking about the devastating earthquake of 1972 that struck at night, the night before Christmas Eve. It killed 10,000 people. It left 250,000 homeless. A devastating event. One woman who wrote about it said they ran out of their house when the shaking started, and the road looked like the ocean with waves going down. Well, none of us wants to ever experience that. Some of you have probably been in bad earthquakes. But the thing that's so upsetting, right, is that what you think and count on to be secure and stable starts moving. That's not a good thing. I think, you know, we've all been through things like that personally in our city, in our state, in our nation. I think about in just a few weeks, we'll be celebrating the 15th anniversary. I don't want to celebrate the right word. We'll be remembering it's the 15th year since 9/11. And that will be on a Sunday, the Sunday we come back and kick off for the new year. And of course, we all know we are sitting on these bodies of ours that at any moment, and at some moment, there will be a bomb that goes off in us, and we'll get a diagnosis. I have a young couple, well, they're in their 40s. I married them back in the 90s in North Carolina and moved out west. And then she just recently, perfectly healthy, you know, diagnosed with, of course, a very rare cancer. Now she's up at Brigham and Women's, and they're trying to save her life. And she won't be able to leave in 2 weeks and go take her oldest son off to college, you know, for his first year. We know how devastating all that is. And we know sooner or later that's what happened to us. And we know that, although we try to deny it, the roads we build our lives on can turn into waves of destruction at any moment. We know the prophet Isaiah was speaking the truth when he said, quote, "The foundations of the earth do shake." Yes, they do. And yet, in the letter to the Hebrews that you just heard read, it proclaims that in the death and resurrection and the gift of the Spirit, that, quote, "We are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken." We are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken. And notice the verb tense there. He doesn't say, when you die and go to heaven, then you'll be in that place where nothing bad can happen and the kingdom will not be shaken. Rather, he says, we are given a kingdom, that we are receiving a kingdom that can't be shaken. Here and now it starts. Another translation puts it, we should be grateful that we were given a kingdom that cannot be shaken. Something that's happening already right now for us in Christ. Now, certainly the New Testament believes when we do die and go to heaven and wait there for the birth of the new creation, we will be in that place of safety, of course. I believe it too, where we will have life eternal with triune God. But it's trying to proclaim the New Testament a deeper truth, and that is, in the midst of the shaking foundations of this world, we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken. And I think that's one reason Jesus spends so much time healing. He's doing it as a sign of the foretaste of the kingdom that is starting now. And so, we got that great story of Jesus in the synagogue on Sunday. Richard Rohr suggests that Jesus didn't do any work the other 6 days of the week. He only did it on the Sabbath because he knew how upset it would make certain people. But there he is. He's in the synagogue on the Sabbath, and the woman, I think of her as a little woman, maybe a little Palestinian woman, comes in all bent over, and that she's been that way forever, for 18 years, which must feel like forever. And we don't get a diagnosis of this. All Luke says is she had a spirit in her that twisted up her back, her spine, so she couldn't stand up straight. So maybe she had an identifiable, a diagnosable physical disease. But also maybe she ended up in this situation because her mind had gotten twisted over the years through a powerful negative story that slowly compromised the flexibility of her body. I mean, Jesus at the end does say that Satan had bound her for 18 years, which leads to the thought that maybe this was something that started in her head and worked itself out in her body. You know, I've known people who, and you have too, who every night before they go to bed, they sit down and they recite all the bad things that have happened to them during the day, right? And there are always things you can think about. You know, the spouse didn't show respect, the boss didn't praise you enough, the kids didn't make straight A's. I mean, you know, and then the body, of course, is slowly breaking down. And they just run through that litany every night without even thinking about it. And then in the morning, they wake up and run through it again just to remind themselves. And then they prepare themselves for the exact same bad thing to happen again that day. Because they know it's going to be bad again. Because it's always bad. And then they steel themselves. These are the people you say hello to and they want to cut your head off. Right? These are the folks you have a little road rage going on the highway. They're ready to fight back because they know it's going to be terrible. But all it is, they're trapped, right, in a false story that's destroying all possibility of joy and peace. And so their body just lives in a state of perpetual rigidity, tenseness, and it's not healthy at all. I knew a woman in North Carolina whose mother was like this, and you know, she said her mother just ran through that litany all the time and had so much negativity in her own life, she couldn't wait to share it with her daughter. So when she would come visit her daughter at the home, from the moment she walked in, she started getting negative about the cooking and the flowers and the kids and the on and on and on. Finally, I said, well, how did you survive that? Because most of the time we grow up learning to believe what our parents tell us is true. They tell us about long enough that we're terrible. That's about what we believe. But what did you do? She said, well, I started treating my mother like I was watching a movie. I just imagined I had a box of popcorn and I was watching mother go off, but it had nothing to do with me. I think that's great advice, by the way. But maybe this is what happened to the woman who's bent over. Maybe she had inherited this kind of negative story and then she took it on herself. And certainly, you know, even if her back was the result of a genetic flaw or she got hit by, you know, a runaway donkey, after 18 years of being bent over like that, we would understand it if she had, right, a really negative mindset. If she did go to bed every night reciting all the bad things that had happened because of her back, we would understand that. But to her credit, she goes to worship on this day. Maybe she went every Sabbath. We don't know. But she doesn't ask Jesus for healing. She just walks into the service. He sees her. He knows her suffering. Calls her over. Says, woman, you have been set free from your ailment. Lays his hands on her. And she stands up straight. And then we are told she began praising God. I think that's really important. This woman has been given a whole new spirit, a spirit of praise. Now you can imagine every night before she goes to bed, she consciously, with a forethought, ticks off all the good things that had happened to her that day. She remembers all the good things and thanks God for them. When she wakes up in the morning, she is filled with that gratitude and praise and expects more great things to happen to her on the coming day. So instead of practicing grievance, she's practicing gratitude. We all know what a difference this makes. Now, Jesus has made for her God's unshakable kingdom the center of her story. That's the center of who she is now, that she's loved and accepted, that she is a daughter of Abraham, he called her. What a wonderful thing to say about this poor woman, you are a daughter. The dignity in that just remakes her spirit. And that master story then becomes her story. And she's set free in so many ways. One of our members, said to me 6 months ago, they heard a talk about practicing gratitude every night. They started to do it, and it started to make a difference. It's amazing what gratitude does for us. So I was looking up gratitude, doing deep research on the internet, and ran across with Dr. Robert Emmons. He's a PhD psychologist, University of California, Davis, I think. He's a national known researcher on the practice of gratitude. And he says, in our studies, we have often told people, just keep a gratitude journal for 3 weeks. Just 3 weeks. And he said, when they do that, the results are overwhelming after 3 weeks. They've done studies of over 1,000 people from ages 8 to 80 and found that people who practice gratitude consistently report a host of benefits, physical, psychological, and social benefits in their life. And he said, you know, gratitude, one thing it does, it helps us celebrate the present moment. He says we spend all our time so much watching, you know, watching our screens. That'll do something to your neck. Watching our screens, watching our sports, watching TV, that when we become more aware of how grateful we are, we become more active participants rather than spectators in our life. And he says gratitude blocks toxic negative emotions such as envy, resentment, and regret, all of which, you know, damage us terribly. And he says grateful people are more stress resistant. There are a number of studies showing those facing serious trauma, adversity, and suffering, if they are people of a grateful disposition, they'll recover much more quickly. And then he said something interesting. He said, grateful people have a higher sense of self-worth because, he said, when you're grateful, you have a sense that someone else is looking out for you. Someone else is looking out for you. You have a sense also that you have a community of people known and unknown to you who are helping to support your well-being. St. Paul in 1 Thessalonians, he didn't say, give thanks for all things. What he said was, give thanks in all things. Give thanks in all things. So I think about a woman named Barbara I knew years and years ago in North Carolina. About 1990, you know, like a number of you, she was treated successfully for breast cancer. And then 10 years later, she said she decided, just out of the blue, instead of her normal shower, she'd take a bath. But she took a bath, and in that process, noticed a lump under one arm. I said, oh. She said, yeah. And she said, you know, I thank God, because if I hadn't taken that bath, I wouldn't have noticed that lump. Now, I don't think that was Barbara's first response. It would not have been my first response. My first response would have been, you know, scared, angry, depressed, you know, all sorts of things. But after about 4 days, when she talked to me, she had moved through those to gratitude. She had found a way to be thankful in something terrible. I was back at the church last August, baptizing my grandson. She comes tottering up. She's in her late 80s, just still filled with gratitude. Just going right along. The cross, the symbol, chief symbol of our faith, shows us that the earthquakes of our lives are precisely the time to look for the kingdom that cannot be shaken. That kingdom is holding each of us in every moment. And those times when we feel the shaking to be the worst is the time to grab on and realize we have been grabbed on too by Christ, holding us, loving us, and bringing us through this to the new creation. We may not know how it's going to work. We may not have a clue why or where it's going to end up, but we know we're in the hands of one who loves us and gave himself for us. So let me just end with the quote we started with from Hebrews this morning. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us give thanks, by which we offer to God an acceptable worship with reverence and awe. Amen.